Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the Brian Lehr Show on WNYC Radio. I'm Mario Murillo, sitting in for Brian Lehr. HBO's Sex and the City series ended in 2004, but Carrie Bradshaw and friends haven't faded from view. The show's in nightly reruns, and a movie updating the characters' lives is shooting around town. But my next guest claims the city in the title shouldn't be limited to New York. Young, single women with money to spend on shoes and in no hurry to marry are found all over the world, from Warsaw to Shanghai. Kay Heimowitz has an essay called The New Girl Order in the autumn issue of City Journal, and she joins us now. Kay Heimowitz, welcome back to WNYC. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
First of all, what is this New Girl Order, and when did you actually recognize it?
Well, I recognized it when I went to Warsaw this past spring. I got off the plane and saw a young woman waiting for her mother and dressed as fashionably as I would expect any young woman in New York to be dressed. It was not what I expected to see in Warsaw, but as I looked into it, I realized that the single young female, what is sometimes referred to as the SYF, that is young women who are unmarried, are now moving to cities in big numbers, and they are taking jobs, delaying marriage, and shopping quite a bit.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that shopping, which you call these Carrie Bradshaw wannabes. They refer to it as sociological Starbucks. You write, they, quote, shop for shoes in Kyoto, purses in Shanghai, jeans in Prague, and lip gloss in Singapore. They sip lattes in Dublin, drink cocktails in Chicago, and read lifestyle magazines in Krakow. They go to wine tastings in Boston, speed dating events in Amsterdam, yoga classes in Paris, and ski resorts outside Tokyo, unquote. And you're obviously that's their demographic, but is it fair to really define somebody simply by how much they consume and what they consume, or is this what you refer to as the New Girl Order?
Well, I'm certainly not only defining them that way. I also define them by their work. You know, it's very common to find these young women working in communications, in the design world, in the media world. The new global economy has, in many ways, opened up jobs that are very friendly to women in creative fields such as the ones that I've just mentioned. So I think that a lot of their identity also can be defined by that. The point, the real major point is in terms of the historical significance of this, of the New Girl Order, is that women are of this age, that is, we're talking the 20s and early 30s, are not married and not having children. And this is something very, very new in history, not so much in the United States and maybe in parts of the Western world. But the point is that this is expanding to areas where it's very, very new and very unexpected.
Mm-hmm. Now, some of the statistics that you point out referred to that. Your analysis is based much on those statistics, but how much of it is also based on kind of anecdotal experiences that you've seen in different parts of the world without necessarily looking at the numbers?
Well, I mean, I'm mostly relying, you know, one tries to use one's observations and then look at the numbers and try to think if the numbers actually support the observations. And in this case, I don't think there's any question that those numbers are supportive of those observations. As I mentioned before, worldwide women are marrying much later, and we're seeing just large numbers of women in their late 20s and early 30s living alone, living in cities, living alone if they possibly can, not always, obviously, because it's quite expensive to live alone. This is, as I say, historically new. Also, you know, to support my observation, I looked at some of the marketing information, and a lot of marketers are realizing that there is a lot of money to be made from young singles who have a lot of discretionary income and spend it, at least if they're women, on clothes, on travel, well, that's true for men too, and increasingly on big ticket items, as I mentioned. I mean, we're seeing an awful lot of women in this country who are single women who are buying real estate. This is, again, something relatively new in our history.
Mm-hmm. Kay Heimowitz's most recent book is Marriage and Caste in America, Separate and Unequal Families in a Post-Marital Age. She's a contributing editor of City Journal. And if you have any of your own experiences you'd like to share with us, we'd like to hear from you. World travelers, Cosmo drinkers, latte drinkers, the pink daiquiri drinkers? Call us with your tales from the New Girl Order at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or you can also post a comment on our webpage at WNYC.org and click on The Brian Lehr Show. Now, you point in your essay to three key factors that are driving this New Girl Order, driving it internationally, obviously here, but also internationally. Could you get into them? Because I think we can get into a lot of different issues on each one of those.
Yeah. Well, as I said before, the first thing is later marriage. This is, again, becoming a worldwide phenomenon. It's particularly prominent in developed countries, where over the last 30 years we've seen a four-year increase in the age of median age of marriage for women. So it's gone from 22 to 26. Now that's median. When it comes to educated women, it's considerably higher. And that's the second part of the demographic story, is increasingly women are becoming educated. In fact, in many countries in the Western Europe, and I think we're going to see this in Asia increasingly as well, women are dominate the numbers in higher education, in college, and even in tertiary education, that is, in graduate school as well. And then the third demographic trend is urbanization. Increasingly, young people move to the city. There is no future for them in the countryside, and they move to the city. And in many places in Europe, you're reading about women who are moving to from their villages, and the men are being left behind, in part because the women are doing better in school and have more opportunities to find in the city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the urbanization question is very interesting, and I'm curious your look into other part. You say Eastern Europe, and of course in Europe, and also in Asia, but obviously urbanization has been a phenomenon for a long time here in the United States, and now it's like a re-urbanization, because for so long people were leaving the cities, they were going to the suburbs and marrying, and it was the post-war boom. That demographic, so the demographic that you're describing is not necessarily new, certainly in the United States and in Western Europe, right? It's something that's been around for a long time.
Well, I think in the United States, the urbanization that you see, that is young women, young people who are coming to the city, I think that is actually relatively new. And again, it has to do with delayed marriage, because you have this period of life in which you're single, and you're looking for a very different kind of lifestyle than you will be when you are married, or at least many people are. So I think that the tendency has always been for people to move out of the city once they married, and as I said, they're marrying later, increasingly later.
How about the media? You allude to it, and obviously the globalized media system, where Sex and the City is probably translated into dozens of languages, but obviously it's not only a Sex and the City phenomenon, it's more of a metaphor. How much of an impact has that had on this process?
Huge. Sex and the City is one of the most popular TV shows in all around the world now. In Asia, in various parts of Asia where you can't see it on TV, there are bootleg copies of the TV show. It is an enormous hit, but it's not just Sex and the City. It's also Friends. It's also Ally McBeal, if you can remember that one. These are enormously popular shows, but then we also have the genre of writing called chick lit. It's often referred to as chick lit. Those books also are enormously popular. There are writers in English who have been translated into 20 plus languages, and those their books are being read by young women all over the world.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is a good question. It raises the issue of whether this is a liberation, or is this an impact of another form of cultural imperialism? Your sense on that?
Well, you know, one of the interesting phenomena about this is that nobody seems to be talking much about feminism. In other words, it's
right.
Not ideological. I think it has certain correlations with feminist thinking, because women who become independent through work and are exposed to a more autonomous lifestyle in the city are necessarily going to be thinking about themselves differently. But they don't tend to use traditionally feminist language with which to do this. So I don't think, as I said, that it's remotely ideological. It seems to me that it is really driven by changes in the economy and changes in demography.
I'm Mario Murillo, sitting in for Brian Lehrer on The Brian Lehrer Show. This is WNYC. We're speaking with our guest, Kay Heimowitz, who is the author of Marriage and Caste in America, and we're talking about The New Girl Order, an interesting essay that she has contributed in the latest edition of City Journal. Let's go to your calls. We have a lot of people calling in interested. Let's go to Swapna, who's joining us from the Upper West Side. Swapna, thanks for calling.
Hi, Brian. The reason I'm calling is all this does not sound terribly new to me. In 1970, I was an air hostess with Air India. And yes, we used to say, I have to go to Singapore to buy, you know, the latest style in pants. I have to go to Hong Kong to get my hair cut. We were very well paid. We were very admired. And we had this lifestyle a long time ago. So I don't think it's necessarily the developed world or underdeveloped world. And I don't think it's now either. Some of us had it even then.
Is your thoughts about that, or is this an upwardly mobile thing?
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
No, I'm going. Thank you for your call, Swapna.
Okay.
Thanks for that. Is it for the upwardly mobile, or is this a certain class that you see experiencing this?
Oh, Kay? Well, sure. This is still a privileged minority. I mean, most people are not in a position to be shopping for designer bags. Although, remember,
or aspiring to get obtain designer bags.
Well, perhaps, but remember, yeah. We now have these discount, large discount stores. Perhaps discount isn't quite the right word, but we have stores like H&M, which are again global. You know, there are young women shopping in H&M in Krakow, Poland, and they may not be able to afford designer bags, but many of them can afford H&M and are living in the city and now able to buy some clothes for themselves, nice clothes for themselves, and think about themselves rather differently. Now that is new. India is, you know, I'm sure there's always been a very small class of privileged people who have been able to live this way. My point is that these numbers are increasing, and it largely because of these changes in the economy, and it is driven by globalization and by increasing affluence as well.
Okay, let's go to our next call. Annette joining us from Montclair. Kyla joining us from Harlem. Thank you, Kyla.
Hi, thanks a lot for taking my call. I wanted to say before I heard your speaker say something about there isn't a reference to feminism, and I think that explicitly she's absolutely on point. But what I will say is I grew up, you know, I was born in the 70s, I'm 33, and grew up watching my mother and my father, who were both physicians, have their own lives, have commitments at night. My mother looking gorgeous and fabulous as she went about being a physician and becoming recognized in her field. But back in those days, when people did get married earlier, they met in medical school, got married right afterwards, and went about their careers. And one of the things I find, those women that I admired when I was younger, like Toni Morrison, like Carolyn Heilbrun, like Betty Friedan and Gloria Steinem, well, in Gloria Steinem's case, it's different, but they had to sort of fight around their family lives to make an independent life and got recognition often later in life. Whereas now, as young women who've grown up being told, you can do anything because our mothers and our aunts and our grandmothers fought the good fight for us before, we assume we should have an independent career and that a marriage and a man and children have to be factored into our overall goals. That's not the only goal anymore.
Thank you, Kyla, for that. And I think that's one of the points you're making, Kay, is that this is the kind of approach that's being embraced around the world.
Well, not exactly, you know, because I don't think that a lot of these women in Japan, for instance, in China, were, you know, people who are growing up in a village in China, young women, are not being raised to think in quite the terms that the caller is describing. I think this is, again, driven by opportunities that are now available to people that just didn't exist before. So that the idea that these women, let's say in a small town in Eastern Europe, when she was growing up, they were still living under communism, and there were no opportunities. so that the expectations were entirely different. She wasn't raised to think, oh, I could have it all. She wasn't raised to think that because it just didn't seem in the cards. But now in Eastern Europe, you are seeing an awful lot of women going to the cities, going to college, or at least finding jobs that will have an upward ladder, and delaying marriage in ways that were just unthinkable 20, 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Now, in your piece, you also describe the impact that this has in the long term, especially in some traditional, more traditional societies. You point to the issue of decreasing birth rates across the globe, and that we shouldn't necessarily applaud this idea that it has some kind of long-term positive impact environmentally, because it puts the issue of exploding population growth under control. Talk about that, and I want to follow up with an issue around the question of consumerism in this regard.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you look at the New Girl Order, and you have to applaud a great deal of it. I mean, there are wonderful opportunities for women, expanded aspirations, more freedom. It's impossible to look at this and not think this is a good thing. However, there are social consequences, as there are with any large demographic shift, and we have to recognize those. And one of the things that I talk about is the decline in fertility rates in parts of the, well, actually all over the world, but particularly it's a problem in several European countries, Spain and Italy in particular, and also in China, Japan, Singapore, all over Asia. What you're seeing is such low fertility that we're going to find ourselves with what the demographers call a disequilibrium, where you have so many elderly people that the young people find themselves burdened with more and more old people to take care of. It becomes what sometimes referred to as a pension bomb. So let's say in Europe in general, now you have about 100 workers taking care of 35 pensioners. In another 10, 15, 20 years, it's going to be something like 75 workers taking care of 35 pensioners, or rather 100 workers taking care of 75 pensioners. Now, that means you're working extra hard to take care of the older generation. So as much as we might want to see this population decline for environmental reasons, there are social consequences to it that we also need to recognize.
Mm-hmm. Not to mention that if you cultivate this kind of desire to achieve this demographic status of, glamorous consumer, globetrotting and buying all this stuff, that's certainly going to have its own environmental impact if you're trying to duplicate that in the billions around the world.
Well, that's true as well, yes.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Annette, one call before we move on. Annette in Montclair, New Jersey.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to contrast women of my age who grew up in the 50s. I married in 1958, a college graduate, but the only ambition I had was to marry and have a family, which I did. So when I tuned into Sex in the City, when it was on Channel 11, I don't have HBO, I was appalled by these young women's promiscuity, bedding down with fellows, having just met them in a bar. And if you weren't bedded down in three dates, they talked about the man. He might be homosexual. He might be too close to his mother. I can't get over that.
Okay, thank you, Annette, for your calls. I mean, I guess you're not necessarily pointing, obviously, Kay, and necessarily embracing some of the other messages or subplots that are being put forward in Sex in the City.
Well, no, I mean, that's not my major point here, although there's no question that the autonomy of city life and the excitement of city life and the independence of women's lives now is going to lead to more out of wedlock sexuality. So, as women and men delay marriage, there's going to be more sex. Now, that is true all over the world. You know, we're beginning to see more cohabitation, more premarital sex in very traditional societies, nowhere near as much as you do in this country and in Europe, Western Europe, but the numbers are increasing. And this is another thing we want to keep our eyes out of. It's not so much the premarital sex that I think is the problem, but the out-of-wedlock childbearing. If that begins to go up, then we've got another set of problems to deal with.
Well, we'll just have to leave it there. Kay Heimowitz, thanks for being with us. Kay Heimowitz is a contributing editor of City Journal and the William E. Simon Fellow at the Manhattan Institute. And coming up next, your calls for Hillary Clinton on her 60th birthday. If you have reached 60, what advice do you have for the woman who would like to be president? Give us a call at 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. Don't go anywhere.